Blog Talk Radio.
Is day 256 of the year 2015, otherwise known as the 13th of September 2015. You've arrived at Masonic Effects, where we're trying to explain and trying to address the questions that are on the minds of a lot of people and a lot of Freemasons out there. For the people that have difficulty with conspiracy, and as we get older, it happens to be a sociological phenomenon that our level of suspiciousness increases. And we see this in the news and in our neighborhoods and in our conversations. Nothing to do with the world around us. It has to do with the process of our own sense of growing vulnerability. We're not as mobile as we were when we were 25 years old. We're not as flexible. It's consciously and unconsciously we begin to have a sense of the limits. We're going to and it affects us. We become things that were commonplace become something that grabs our attention. We start to think about things that we're, we start to complain quite a bit. We notice danger and risks and things that walking up and down a flight of stairs. You used to take them two at a time, and now you're hanging onto the handrail. It's interesting, the aging process. I want to talk to you today. We want to get into, some ideas about what this order is that we've committed ourselves to. And I think we might have hit the mother load with this one. But first, I'd like you just to, because it's the time of the year, we're coming in very close to the autumnal equinox, that balance point that happens twice a year. When the sun is directly on the equator and the length of day and night is nearly equal. So this one happens in where I am on the 23rd of September. So that's 10 days from now. So we may have a chance to be together again before that happens. And it happens here at 4:22 in the morning Eastern Daylight Time. So if you're influenced by such things, or you think you are, don't be surprised if you find that that's an enriched day. But it wouldn't be fall without hearing a reminder from one of the more enduring composers, Antonio Vivaldi, and of course it's from the Four Seasons. Just a tease. Thank you. get the idea. Just a taste. Just a taste. You want to hear the rest of it? It's not a very long passage, as you know. But you can find your way around the you can find your way around the internet and bring up that piece of music. Vivaldi was an interesting fellow. That's for 18th century work. He was an Italian Baroque composer, of course, and he was a virtuoso on the violin. And he taught, and he was a cleric. Interesting man, philanthropic. He started an orphanage for little girls and funded that. And it was, and he has an influence, but it's something that we have as sort of the background for classical music, and for some of us, it's music that we look forward to. His passage is the Four Seasons, because. But enough, enough of that. We have an episode to talk about here. I've talked about this one. I've headed this one, searched out what I was trying to the tasty bits of this one, and I thought giving you an indication that vibrancy and energy is something that's a part of the fabric of Freemasonry. I'd like you to indulge me just for a minute and see if I can't convince you that this is a perspective worth mentioning. Now, today I'm going to try and persuade you that Freemasonry is an influence. You know, for those of you who may have be looking at Masonry as in terms of its objectionable assets, aspects, that's perfectly understandable. Everything has that valence. Everything. Sunshine we need in order to produce life as we know it. But there's a downside to sunshine. Water we need more than food as our organisms, but there's a downside to water. Air, same thing. So we have, so depending on the perspective, and it's not that your perspective is right or wrong, it is what it is. If we're at all intelligent, we can look at similar objects and similar events and ideas, even ideas, and examine them from different perspectives, like holding up a gemstone. There's not just one way to look at it. Although, you know, it's curious when you think about it. This was something in the 15th century that became quite a cause célèbre. And I'm thinking about the painter, Alberti, a Venetian painter, I believe. And he was he's credited with giving us and teaching us what artists today use commonplace, perspective. The debate, you know, perspective where you're looking at something at a distance. Something at a distance is smaller than something close to the eye. And what he did was start to play with the geometry. And it wasn't as developed as it became in the 80s with fractal geometry, Mendelheim's work, but, you know, which is now clearly standing there with Euclidean work. But it was the debate from the position of authenticity and what was real. The thinking was that it was a distortion. It was deceptive for us to be valuing proportion and perspective, because a big object is always a big object. It's never a small object, no matter whether it's far away or close to us. That was the thinking of the day. But our perception, it doesn't trick us. We don't think that the monument is also small because it's far away, and then somehow it morphs into something bigger. It's there in our mind's eye. There's that continuity. We realize that the tree isn't a series of small, medium, and large trees. it's all one tree, but the way that we look at it changes. So the artists have taken that into account in their work. Where that didn't happen, you look at Egyptian work, and it's all that same. And we've talked about that uniformity, no matter, 12,000 years later, that uniformity, purity, if you will, is still there. So this this notion of the debatable perspective isn't just something that happens in the discussions around Freemasonry, but allow yourself with that same enthusiasm and curiosity in mind to look at what we talk about critically. Allow yourself to do that, but without that, try to do it without the value judgment that anything that isn't consistent with your own thinking, it must be bad. This opens up that Pandora's box that the religious leaders certainly didn't think we were capable of handling. They, in their wisdom, had determined over the centuries that we needed a script. We needed the canons to enable us to live together collectively. So church law was an interpretation of what is, not based on church law, based on a need to be consistent with scripture. And we've discovered, so we're reading material Masonically that's been passed down after people began to write. And it wasn't necessarily the first things written from one Masonic body to another, one Masonic pen in letter, but the things that were leaked. The Edward Snowden of the days, the scandal. When you re-examine it, who's the villain? It's curious. And with time, we begin to actually value some of those early manuscripts, don't we? Those early pamphlets, those early exposés, as a way of piecing together meaning. It's almost like an archaeological work. So time has helped us to be able to grasp the information in its fullness, as Margaret MacMillan is prone to teaching us. If we filter out history to only look at the positives, then we're really misguiding ourselves, and we can learn very little, very, very little, unless we look at things truthfully and in its wholeness. And that means we sometimes have to look at the painful parts, and sometimes we need to be able to hold the idea of accountability as a constant while we're looking at this. So Masonry in our jurisdiction is consolidating, I would say. My own humble opinion, unsanctioned. It's consolidating expansions and contractions. And it's finding a new level of confidence that speaks to a new, vibrant, young cohort of Canadians. And I'll try and generalize here. Perhaps this is just something that's also going on in other jurisdictions. Perhaps the best way to explain Masonry in the 20th century is the word adaptable. The Balkans, remember the Balkans? Courland and Lithuania and then Estonia and Latvia. And there's Latvians and their connection with Finland and all that kind of business. The Balkans became an ignominious setting for assassination. We went to war, but rewriting borders was our failing. Mankind paid for those mistakes, and we paid with a price unfathomable. We justified death on such a scale, and still are silence of shame over this stain in the conscience of humanity. I can't talk about it. It's still too new. You know, nuclear obliteration. How we could justify that. So it speaks about the depths, the darkness of the human mind. Not military might, certainly. Civilization and progress were no longer coterminous. Weren't the same. We welcome the 21st century awakening, the conspiracy theorists, you know, all the computers are going to crash, bad things are going to happen because it's been predicted. Remember, it wasn't that long ago. And collective paranoia with a lost sense of innocence. Where do we go to find our innocence? It's gone. And then social media changed the rules. Now, bad behavior is photographed. People with responsibility are being held to a new level of honesty and accountability. We weren't quite expecting that, or I'm sure the people in power would have made efforts to ban these things. Nobody wants that kind of expose, the exposure. And then we find through that some of the things that have been going on, the actions of so-called democratic government, have been happening in secrecy, again, for our own good, our collective good. I think there is a collective good. And I think the values of Freemasonry are part of that notion, but we need to always be accountable to one another. And so we've found through some, and these are kind of exposés have been going on forever, the nature of mankind. So you think about it, if you're doing something, somebody's doing something nefarious, it will be known. Don't be so conceited to think that it won't. And there will be that day of reckoning. Always is. And it doesn't always mean that the adjustments make sense. Sometimes they're quite emotional, but such is life with large numbers of people. So the idea of civilization and progress, we began to look at the how do we live with the benefits of a developed culture, developed economy, at least the we're seeing the experiments of capitalism being dismantled. And it's fraying at the edges rather badly right now. Still, the proponents of that system are going to cling. You know, this is power, so you don't give up power unless it's necessary. But it's faded. This idea of 7 billion people having the potential to communicate amongst themselves without government oversight has never occurred to people before, people in power. What is that going to do? Well, we know we have to stamp out the conspiracy. Well, we really haven't been able to do that. That's about as effective as the war on drugs that Nixon declared in the States for all of us in North America. Well, Canada sat slack-jawed saying, oh, well, okay, that's the way it is. Well, that's been an abysmal, expensive failure. And now we're morphing into this next step of benevolence. And realizing that it's a lot less damaging to us culturally and philosophically if we treat people with some degree of humaneness. Boy, is that going to change the rule book. Masonry somehow came out of the 20th century with a capacity to speak to a global community. What was it? Was it 1964 when we put people in space and we photographed the Earth, and we began to have that sense of us isolated in the universe, floating in this universe that has, we know is expanding, and we know things about it we didn't know then. But there you have it. This Masonic order has that universal voice, has had it from back in what, 15th century, 16th century, somehow these ideas have endured because they are good ideas. They are valuable. But as you can see, they're not totalitarian. Nobody's demanding that anyone accept these principles and live this way. These, I think, are closer to natural law, to the qualities of natural law, than any other, I don't know if I'd say this is principles, but this is as close to natural law. Natural law is that philosophy that certain rights or values are inherent by virtue of your nature, human nature, and they're universally recognizable through their cognizant. Human reason finds them. Historically, natural law refers to the use of reason to analyze social and personal behavior and nature, to find those rules that bind, those rules of moral behavior. We only have to look, turn our glance to the Scottish Rite to see the bundle of chapters in the stories of natural law, moral behavior. So what Masonry is examining. It's not creating it. It's examining this, and it's illustrating this. Some philosophy that certain rights or values are inherent by virtue of human nature. So keep that in the back of your mind. That's part of the nature of Masonry. We'll be right back. I do know the lodge in Toronto that allows you to listen to that as an opener before you sit down with the brethren. Fascinating what it does to galvanize the minds. It's amazing. Anyway, that was by a pianist, Vladimir Horowitz, such a graceful, beautiful human being. He was alive. Very talented man. So listen here, listen up here. We're going to talk a little bit about the negative discovery, the problems with negative discovery. Here's a few examples. We don't like to have our you know, we have an imagination that helps us to answer questions that logic won't answer for us. But we don't like having those gaps. Negative discovery has it's not as nearly as welcome as finding something new and affirmative. That's where all the excitement is. People don't like to have their imaginations unfurnished. The legendary Great South Land, which Cook erased from the land, remember? The explorer Cook. He was on a mission to discover the notion. The question was, is there this Great South Land? And Cook discovered through his travels that it didn't exist. It didn't make him popular. We all wanted to find that at the time. We all wanted to find that prosaic answer to our imagination. This was the guy, remember, let's say the infant masonry was born in 1717. There was nothing before that, you know, that was it. But he hasn't had his, you know, yeah, James Cook wasn't really given much credit. But think about this in terms of the parallels with masonry. He earned his place in history by proving that the great southern continent didn't exist. Remember, he was in line with, he followed, you know, we like the discoveries of Leif Erikson, remember, and Columbus. Cortez, Magellan, Drake, we love this sense of adventure and discovery. That's the affirmative side. But how do we romanticize James Cook? He proved that something that was in the mind didn't really exist at all. So we're inclined to forget. We were inclined that he reached this fable land. This land was supposed to reach up from Antarctica toward the Southeast Asia, and it was that if that happened, that would make the Indian Ocean a lake. But we forget. Very easy to forget. He disproved this. So this was erased from the map because of his travels. So we don't like that. Remember, this guy had his chops. He left England in 1772. He didn't come back until July 1775. It's a long, long journey. So there was no... anyway, the long and the short of it is, this was one of the greatest and one of the longest discovery voyages in history. We weren't taught that. He sailed more than 70,000 miles. And there had never been... Before that, there had never been so long a voyage with one focused inquiry. Never before. And it wasn't to plant a new colony or to find gold or to capture slaves. He had gone out earlier and went to Tahiti. And it was brilliant. He got to Tahiti using astronomical observations of the transit and movement of Venus. Yeah, Morningstar, hanging in a Masonic lodge, by the way. And he found that on the 3rd of June in 1769. So you can imagine the 18th century is full of these types of positives. What do we do with the negative discovery? We don't like to find things out that... suggest that our reasoning had been wrong. And yet, during the centuries, the church was faced with that actual process. The things that had been positioned as fact, as science, were proven to be wrong. Now, we fast forward all of this just a little bit. I'll come back to it, of course, but a little bit. We stepped into the 21st century with more negative discovery. The church of our forefathers no longer performed with the same authenticity because that had eroded through negative discovery. The negative discovery of what is, not what could be. The human failings repeatedly peeled away the organization of the church from the ideology. The power, now we live in a land here where those influences, the influences and the dictates about how to live are largely left to the decisions of the person, the individual. You decide if you go to church, you decide what your belief is. That creates other complications in this culture, always complications and adjustments of some sort. But it's not any longer that we have a single leader that dictates the terms and that we all are obedient. We didn't arrive here out of the stork being dropped by a stork. We all came here with history that is important to each and every one of us. And here we are creating a new country, a new neighborhood. When we are 10 times larger, that will happen one day, there will be 10 times more interest in these marginal topics and discussions. The world doesn't necessarily know right now if these small discussions will lead to something great. But when you have larger numbers of people to support the ongoing debates and criticisms and discussions, there is more opportunity to rediscover ideas. Masonry is doing that for us, helping us to rediscover enormously influential and positive ideas about the greater good and our own individual development. Now, you can see there are six, think about it, we can study, you and I right here, we'll go over just a little bit of what was going on in the day that allows us to talk about the progress that most lay people have no context for. Right here, how enormous the achievements have been through negative discovery. This is just staggering. Here's just six of them. The Earth is not the center of the universe. The Sun is not the center of the universe. Our galaxy is not the center of the universe. Our type of matter is not the dominant constituent of the universe. Now, this dark matter predominates. There's greater mass we can't necessarily measure. Our universe is not the only universe. And our physics is not the only physics. There might exist separate universes with completely different physics. So, how do we begin to... What does that do for us? It positions us really well. We have now thrown light into a dark corner of our minds. Now we can run mental experiments. Einstein did that, taught us a great deal through the mental experiments. We learn a great deal. The telescope and the microscope, clear instruments. So if you're thinking this is all about philosophers and mathematicians, not so. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics alone, if that's all that's devalued, our world is going to become enormously imbalanced. And we've seen that back in from 2008 with the bankruptcy in ethics, with the rogue traders. The stock market. There we find that we have missed that we have paid the price for devaluating a study of ethics and philosophy. And oh, we may never stop paying that price. So if history has no sense of kindness, it is what it is. The judgment is remarkably clear. It's just a burden for you and I to understand what it is as Freemasons. But we still need to create telescope and the microscope. They've extended and broadened and deepened our human faculties of vision. Now, you and I know that, as I started this program talking about perspective, this isn't something that plays with our perception. We have machinery that does it as well. I don't know if we've had the debate about whether that's deception because we're using a telescope or we're using a microscope. Hard to believe, but I think it might be an interesting exercise. A machine is something else. It's a device that can be activated by forces outside the human body. And it brings in data not accessible to the unmechanized human body. We can't see what a microscope allows us to see without the microscope. So the really interesting part of this is that the discoverer, you and me, is no longer confronted by nature, but the data accessible to the person. That's what confronts us. We create the machines, and the machines create data. Yeah, and we're hearing that about all this information that we're producing, this knowledge. It's not just data. It's being applied very rapidly. And why not? And why shouldn't we realize that it's happening at such a rate all over the place that no one person can necessarily stay ahead of it? Where do we get this notion we have to stay ahead of it? And where in the world do we get this notion that we have to understand all of these developments? And at what point did we ever begin to assume that our limited knowledge was all that there was? That the development of our ideas and our choices using the most available information was total. It's always been an approximation. It's always been temporary. It's always been an experiment. It's the best that we can do at the time, and that's all right. It's always been that way. So be reasonable about the negative discoveries of the new media and what we're able to describe about this synergy. That the knowledge is being applied to because it's helpful. Even in the day, if back in the day of the development of the great cathedrals or the Parthenon or the pyramids, if somebody had developed a grinder instead of a hammer and a chisel, every one of those boys and girls out there would have been using a grinder. Don't delude yourself. It's pure because they were using the best and most advanced tools that were available at the time. That's the message. That's the thread that links with today. Use the new. But to do that, you need to understand what's new. Well, is it remarkably brilliant to use an old style? Well, yeah. At times, it's wonderful to use original tools, to use antique instruments to play music so that we can experience those moments in history. But it's in the context of a choice. No tradesman worth his salt will use an inferior tool. No, the artificers don't use inferior tools. They may keep an old tool, an old chisel in their toolbox because for them it does something better than any alternative. That's a tradesman that's in touch. So Let's give credit to, let's at least acknowledge the context of negative discovery and how unpalatable it is. It's not a dish we serve up well in our culture. Because we can't have a ticker tape parade when that social media is producing. The reason why it seems that it's polarizing is because it's not that these younger people coming along are any more genius. It's that they've got less on their minds than somebody that necessarily less experienced than somebody in their 60s and 70s. All the folks, the boys and girls I know that are in their 60s and 70s sat down with the material and studied it as diligently as these college students do. They would seem to be the masters of all of this new information. It's just that it's not that you can't do it. It's just that you haven't done it. You haven't practiced. Perhaps you stand by a piano. You're not a pianist, but you could be. Learn how to play. Get somebody to teach you and practice. Put in your 20,000 hours and then you find that you're able to have a touch that draws emotion from the keyboards. As we saw from Mr. Horowitz, heard from Mr. Horowitz. We do precision guesswork, though. So how am I doing convincing you that masonry is an influence? Now, in it, is it functioning at exactly the level that it needs to function? Exactly. The geometry of masonry is that it endures. And the ideas, you think about it, if all of the ideas were whittled down and the membership of Freemasonry and the entire face of the earth was resting with one last Freemason, all of those ideas would be on the shoulders or in the mind of that one last, or in the library of that one last Freemason. Now, do we want to turn them over and see what gender or her, what gender that last Freemason is? Don't be absurd. Don't be absurd. I want to speak to you about that just for a moment. We've heard people ask us about that in different times, and we tend to shy away from that question. Why is it a boys' school? And I think the clearest, most honest answer is asking why an oak isn't a maple. I'm not quite sure I can answer that. Why is a rock not a star? I don't know I can answer that. It's not to say that it's exclusion. It's exclusionary. An oak doesn't grow to exclude a maple. Doesn't grow to exclude a birch. So if you and I are standing in front of that oak tree, it would seem odd to ask ourselves or ask the why that oak tree isn't larch. Why isn't it an elm or an ash? It isn't those things because it is an oak. We aren't a co-ed organization because we are a male organization. There's not a meanness in the oak. There's not a politic to the oak. It's formed roots. It's using photosynthesis. It provides shade. It ages. It gives off fruit to seed to reproduce. And it exists because of these combination of ingredients that are necessary, combination of conditions that are necessary for it to exist. Now, we can come along as maple farmers. And let's say we're harvesting maple syrup. And we can say, why that oak? Why isn't that oak part of our maple forest? It's not part of our maple forest, so we should probably cut it down so that everything can be part of a maple forest and we can tap them and we can make more maple syrup and everybody will be happy. You see what I'm getting at? To understand and how to answer those questions about the nature of masonry, it's not what it isn't. There's no negative discovery. There's no malevolence. It's not created on this notion that we're going to do this, but we need to exclude women. It never was. The roots, the seed that germinated this grew an oak. This is what has grown us. Now, we know the science of why we were born boys. We have some sad countries now that were performing infanticide, killing off little girl babies. Oh, and now, lo and behold, they find out all these boys don't have enough, there's not enough women to go around for them to find partners. Only have themselves to blame, I guess. There's no smug satisfaction in saying that. So those old cultures have to learn the hard way. Why they did that, who knows? So do you want to... They were making an effort to make everything maple trees. Let's get rid of all those unnecessary oak trees because they're not as productive. They're not as valued. And we see those charming little princes when they come over here, and the old culture dies very quickly here. That the conceit is challenged quite readily. There's a lot of people coming to our culture, this pluralism, that are astounded by the changes that occur in one or two generations. But nevertheless, those changes endure. So we are diversified, and our forest is full of comes because there's oaks, but there's different kinds of oaks, isn't there? Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to, I don't think that was too much of a distraction. I'm going to, we'll be right back after a little music by this is from somebody named Rita Coolidge, a native woman. You may recognize some of her music from the 70s. Be back in a second.
Close your eyes and dream.
Lovely. Familiar voice for some of you, I'm pretty sure. You'll have to admit that's a charming voice to hear in the morning. I'm going to talk a little bit about the context of masonry and what you've inherited, the tools that are available to you, and I hope you'll reconsider and try some of these and see if they're. They give you a better quality of work than what you've been using in the past. Try it. You're all experienced masters in the craft. I have a sense of we can play with the notions and we can play with our learning. And we can learn in a playful way or we can be quite dramatic about it. I just love the stern-faced, rigid-jawed fellows that are telling me the way life is, as if expertise is a competition, and I find that the knowledge that we have is truly relative, and it depends on what's leaking out of us, and it seems to depend on the perspective that we take that is taken. So I guess it sometimes boils down to the question of whether you feel that the world is you exist in a black and white, a yes or no environment, or whether you do, as masonry suggests, embrace that notion of the shades of gray that allow us to more fully grasp the nuance and connections and meanings around us. Is it a choice? Absolutely. But is it a phenomena? It's as clear as an oak growing in a maple forest. Yeah, it is what it is, and it's hard to reconcile. So tell me here, all you experts out there, put up your hands if you if you know what day it is and how many days masonry has existed. Really? Here's a little phenomenon I want you to take into account. Remember when back in the early times, we operated using different calendars, different measurements of time. Remember? And how many of you remember that when Canada, pre-constitutional Canada, change from the Julian to the Georgian calendar. It was 1752. In order to make that adjustment, the calendars didn't necessarily fit together, right? How many days were lost in Canada when that happened? The answer is different. In France, 10 days were lost. They made this move in 1582. So they had a Georgian calendar. So did Italy, and not all of France, but most. So did Italy and Poland and Portugal and Spain. And in the next year, 1583, in Austria and Germany. So you think 1582, five countries had one calendar. Austria and Germany were working on another. Hungary was using it, the Julian, and it didn't change until 1587. And then Prussia, the Catholic states had changed in 1583, but in Prussia, the part of Germany, 1610. Here, we waited until 1752. So did the United Kingdom, and we did it most areas of the United States. We lost 11 days. Japan held on until 1872, 1873. They gave up 12 days to do it. Bulgaria, of course, Balkans and Bulgaria became important in 1916, 1918, Bulgaria, and then 18, Estonia and Russia. Greece was 1923. And Turkey is the last, 1926, 27. So there are certain days that don't exist according to what calendar that you're using. Now, the Protestants did go had it, because this was just far too papist. You know, we had Protestant Toronto and Catholic Montreal, and oh my goodness. Well, we can't have that influence. We can't be following around a papist, you know, we can't be influenced by a papist calendar. We have to dredge up that old dirt and throw it at the wall and see what sticks. Well, you know, jeez. If it wasn't so sad, it'd be laughable. Julian calendar was so out of step with a tropical year. And too many leap years, you know, just too much going on. And it was moving slower, you know, there was an error of one day every 128 years. That was a lot more than the Georgian. Anyway, have fun with that. Calculate how many days, you know, use that as a calculation. Depends, you know, it's relative. So you give a date, we're using the Georgian calendar, or, you know, if we're thinking about something in the 17th century, where was it happening? What country? And then we can calculate what calendar they were using. See? And then we can do the recalibrate to a Georgian calendar, depending on where and when. It's all the calculations, isn't it? Or we can simplify it. Does it really matter? Well, if it doesn't matter in the discussion, don't use it. Now, just as a little sample, as we wrap up today's show, I'm going to talk to you. I'm reading from something that I just find fascinating. This guy, this Canadian, that went down to California, young guy, and he just started, you know, pouring out all kinds of information. Manly P. Hall. Even the name, I think, is kind of a curiosity these days. I just think it's remarkable. And he wrote. He was quite prolific. And I'll just give you a little bit of a taste. You know, this is like just that taste of that goat cheese. When you're not quite used to it, you just want a little bit on a little cracker and maybe some escargot, maybe with a little escargot or, you know, and a nice glass, a swallow of red wine. Confronted with a problem using the reasoning faculties. Individuals with a strong intellect keep their poise. That's you. Even when something doesn't make sense in front of us. Well, there are people in the world that are trained to operate with that. There are others that are just shot, you know, they just panic. They're going to get their panties in a wad because what they see in front of them doesn't make any sense. You know, those are folks that love a rule book. And they can't really think outside of rules. And if everybody would have understood the rule book, you know, this is the superior subordinate kind of way of thinking. It just fuels that radicalism. Eh? But those of an immature mentality, says Manley. On the other hand, when similar confronted, are overwhelmed. So we use his words. It's safer for me to do that, of course, intellectually dishonest, but it's safer because I can say, oh, really, wasn't me. I love you. You know, I love you just the way you are, you muddle-headed little thing. But but the truth is, you are mentally immature. While the former may be qualified to solve the riddle of our own destiny, the latter must be led like a flock of sheep and taught in simple language. Here's this. This is a boy talking and a man talking in very bold terms, isn't he? They, the little flock of sheep, depend almost entirely upon the ministrations of the shepherd. Well, yeah. The Apostle Paul said that these little ones must be fed with milk, but that meat is the food of strong men. Thoughtlessness is almost synonymous with childishness, while thoughtfulness is symbolic of maturity. So when you see that around, that thoughtlessness, consider whether Manly P. Hall had a clue at all, knew what he was talking about, or not. I just want to give you a little bit of an idea. I'm going to give you a quote here. Somebody that I've read about a little bit, fascinating life, can't always understand the man. I'm talking about Albert Pike. He was a general in the Southern Army, well respected in the North. A real phenomenon, I think. An interesting man. Why is his monument in the plaza in Washington? Who knows, you know? Anyway, this is a quote giving instructions to the 23 Supreme Councils of the world. Supreme Councils, Scottish Rite. That which we must say to the crowd is, we worship a God, but it is the God one adores without superstition. To you, Sovereign Grand Inspector General, we say this, and you may repeat it to the brethren of the 31st, 32nd, and 30th degrees. The Masonic religion should be by all of us initiates of the high degrees maintained in the purity of the Luciferian doctrine. If Lucifer were not God, would Adonai, the God of the Christians, whose deeds prove cruelty, perfidy, and hatred of man, barbarism, and repulsion of science, would Adonai and his priests culminate him? Yes, Lucifer is God, and unfortunately, Adonai is also God. So the eternal law is that there is no light without shade, no beauty without ugliness, no white without black. For the absolute can only exist as two gods, darkness being necessary for light to serve as its foil, as the pedestal is necessary to the statue and the brake to the locomotive. Thus the doctrine of Satanism is heresy, and the true and pure philosophical religion is the belief, the equal of Adonai, God of light, God of good, struggling for humanity. The God of darkness is there for a purpose. Meaty stuff. Forces you to think. Is he saying the devil is there? Oh, God, you know? No. What he's saying is we can't have insight. We can't have the light without the darkness. It's like Christmas every day. If every day were Christmas, Christmas wouldn't exist. So, come back and join me next week. In the meantime, I'm going out sailing when the weather isn't quite as dangerous. Yesterday was 40 knots, a little bit dangerous for the likes of me, bobbing around. This is from another Canadian, Robbie Robertson. You'll like this. I'll look forward to being with you again soon. I hope we've added to the conversation about your perspective and the influence of that Freemasonry is an influence, but it requires an open mind and a good student to grasp it all. Thanks for your time. See you soon.
distant red neon shivered in the heat. I was feeling like a stranger in a strange land. You know where people play games with the night. I was too hot to sleep. I followed the sound of a jukebox coming from up the levee. All of a sudden I could hear somebody whistling from right behind me. I turned around and she said, "Why do you always end up down at Nick's Cafe?" I said, "I don't know. The wind just kind of pushed me this way." She said, "Hang the rich."
Is there